And welcome to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
My name is Sebastian. Wait, did we do a sound check?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
I was watching it.
Oh.
Yeah.
You just recorded me babbling and I wasn't paying attention. Okay.
Talking about the need for energy drinks and looking like the Statue of Liberty.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's all in there.
Apparently there's a folder somewhere of all the sound checks where I didn't realize I was being recorded. So what's, I'm Sebastian.
Yeah.
So, and you're Luke. Did you say?
We've done that. We've covered that.
Oh, okay.
Thank you for, you know, our listeners for tuning in. We're very excited to see, not to see you, obviously, because this is radio and we can't see people. Mm. But we're very excited that you're engaging in our conversation. Very exciting. Okay.
All right.
We are playing.
Uh-huh.
We're going to start off with a song. This is Do They Know It's Christmas Time?
Oh, my God.
And I'm just kidding. Please. We are not playing any Christmas music.
On Saturdays, before we record, we meet up for brunch. And this morning I got there just ahead of you. So I got to hear more of the down-tempo, acoustic, sad melodic cover of Do They Know It's Christmas? And you got in just in time to realize the torture there was.
Oh, it was dreadful. Now, we are going to be talking about things a little bit different. Did you know?
Did I know?
That Google have released gender-neutral gaming console remotes. Oh, they're going to. It's the Stadia remote. It's very well received.
Aren't they already?
According to an interview on CNN with a Google exec, they found that other consoles like PlayStation remotes and Xbox remotes were too gosh darn masculine. And there's just these remotes for PlayStations are so manly that women couldn't possibly play them. So they've had to release gender neutral remotes in black, white, or wasabi green.
Okay.
So those are the three inoffensive colors. I think this is ridiculous. I mean remotes aren't bleeding gendered.
They're already black and white for
I
one.
Know. Yeah.
I don't get that.
It's the really offensive red remotes, I think. That's what it is.
Oh my. Well, I mean, the one thing I could say is that I have seen remotes, because I actually have a lot of friends who are ladies who are gamers. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them prefer the PlayStation over the Xbox controller because the PlayStation controller is smaller and the Xbox controller is made for like gigantic,
big, bulky hands.
Bare paw man hands, which even I find a little bit uncomfortable. I actually have small hands for a guy my size.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know.
You should run for president.
I'm not insecure about it. It's, anyway. But yeah, I also find the PlayStation controller more comfortable in my hand than the gigantic bear paw man hand ones. So if they made controllers that were like smaller and larger, and also smaller for kids' hands too, because kids also play games, but then you'd be gendering the console controllers that way by making a large.
I think it's ridiculous. If
bear paw size,
the Google exec on CNN said we have made more ergonomically friendly remotes to reach a wider audience. Everyone's like, wow, that's good. What color is it? Wasabi green. Weird, but okay. But no, it has to be gender neutral.
Yeah.
Come on. Last time I checked, gaming remotes do not have genitalia attached to the side of them.
Or gender identities.
No. When I play PlayStation, the remote doesn't tell me that it identifies as a fish. It is a remote. It is just a manufactured tool.
Do you ask to see two pieces of current ID before you interact with it?
Have I checked if the remote's paperwork is up to date?
And then double check that the expiry date hasn't passed yet on that ID.
Speaking of, I need to update my health card.
Oh, I need to update everything.
I want to talk about what has been quite an entertaining story to watch. We talked about it briefly a little while ago when we were talking about rainbow sidewalks popping up everywhere, and we were encouraging murals and so on.
And if you're going to do something, make sure it's meaningful. We're not against the idea of a crosswalk, but put it somewhere that makes sense.
Are you engaging with the community, or are you just virtue signaling?
Yeah, are you just doing optics?
Town of XYZ isn't homophobic. Okay, cool. Great. You could maybe work with your community on that. But so in the town of Chilliwack, BC, they were asked to install a rainbow crosswalk, and they politely declined installing a rainbow crosswalk.
Okay.
To which many people in Chilliwack were not particularly impressed.
Okay.
It was seen very much as a controversial hot-button topic in the town of Chilliwack. And what has happened next is very heartwarming. And what happened in Chilliwack, they said no to this rainbow crosswalk. So the local school is like, you know what? We're going to put one on our property. I dare you to stop us.
Right?
And they didn't. And actually, before the school put theirs in, some individual who had a driveway just before the sidewalk, on the border of the sidewalk and his driveway, installed a rainbow crosswalk on his driveway.
Yep.
Chilliwack now has 16 rainbow crosswalks up and down the town.
And possibly more to come.
And more to come, yeah. And they've actually, I believe they've reached out to the Guinness Book of Records to see if they can get the record for the most rainbow crosswalks in a town.
It's probably going to be somewhere like Tel Aviv. They're probably going to be up against something like that, because Tel Aviv has a
reputation. But most places have, like, you know, maybe you'll have the four corners of a junction. But, you know, 16 is really, and they're all over the place. And I think that's quite a powerful message. You know, not only does it give a very clear message to the Council of Chilliwack,
right?
But, you know, these local folks have seen loopholes in, you know, the city council, and they're like, nah.
Well, I like, okay, so if they had a valid reason, if they said, you know, we're not going to put in a crosswalk because there's no historic LGBT part of town, and the crosswalk is supposed to represent the infrastructure of the community and putting it on the street, and it's symbolic and da-da-da-da, and we don't have that, so instead what we're going to do is we're going to donate money to the following shelter to put a branch for homeless queer street youth instead of painting a crosswalk. And being a town of, I don't know, 50,000 people or something, I've looked it up, I can't remember, you know, already.
It's
but
like...
be like, there'll be like one person in there a year, and that's not much, but it goes a long way for that one person.
You know, there are ways for communities to demonstrate support to the community by commissioning a bunch of LGBT teens to create a mural, for example. Or if a sidewalk is the way to create a public statement that your community is supportive of the LGBT community, then go with a sidewalk. Or, like Chilliwack, give your council the middle and then build 16 of them. So that's, I mean, I think they maybe went a little bit far. Speaking of going a little bit far, we talked last week about the conscience rights. So there was a bill in Alberta, Bill 204 or 207, I forget the exact number of it. But the idea is it meant that it was a private member's bill. And the argument was that doctors wouldn't be forced to provide services that they don't believe with. So we were talking about vegans and you know, people who are Muslim, etc. But it's often conscientious rights are often abortion or euthanasia.
Okay.
So it was Bill 207, the Conscience Rights Act for the Healthcare Workers. It was introduced by the Peace River MLA, member of the Legislative Assembly, and from the United Conservative Party, Dan Williams, in Alberta. Yeah, but it was rejected on Thursday by an all-party committee of the legislature. So it had passed initial reading, it had gone to the committee, and the committee has quite thoroughly rejected this bill. Whether or not that's tied to the substantial backlash that came from the bill, it's hard to say, but we do know that that bill we were talking about last week, where it could have put people in rural communities in very difficult positions, that bill has now been axed.
Okay.
So that's good. Good news. But we are jumping to our first song. This is You Make Me Feel By Sylvester.
By Sylvester, yes, of course.
And the reason we chose it is because it's not Christmassy.
Yep.
And we thought we'll give everybody a little bit of a break from Jingle Bells. Mm-hmm. And we're going to jump in with You Make Me Feel by Sylvester. And we'll be back just after this. Kang, we are home of Canada's queer media. That was You Make Me Feel by Sylvester.
Yep.
Nice and not Christmassy. I want to talk about another good news, because we don't seem to talk enough about it. We talk about the kind of decline and closure of gay bars left, right, and center.
Yes.
Except for in Victoria, British Columbia, where they are opening a new gay bar.
Ooh.
So that's pretty exciting. We wish them the best of luck. I had that open a minute ago.
Okay, here we go.
We're going to have a Google off to find... Where did I put it? It's, you know, we follow news in so many different places that sometimes it's hard to keep track of where they are.
Paparazzi Nightclub.
Is that the name of it?
Yep.
Wow, that was really quick.
On Johnston Street.
It's described as campy and gay.
Ooh.
Which is very exciting. It is the... No, it's not. It's the... The Vicious Poodle is the new one.
Oh, okay.
I do like that name. It reminds me of that short-run TV show, Vicious, with Siri McKellen and... who else was it?
Oh, my.
Jacoby?
Jacoby and Ruffle?
No, it'll come to me. The other actor. But, yeah, we also want to talk about... there was a letter penned...
I think the only thing better than Vicious Poodle would be, like, Purse Chihuahua.
No, I think Vicious Poodle also sounds pretty gay.
A full-size poodle, though, is a large animal. It's the teacup poodles that usually when people think of poodles, they think of the teacup poodles. But a full-sized standard poodle is actually a large beast.
That is true.
If it got angry, it could hurt you.
Derek Jacoby. I knew I had the right name.
His name is not Ruffle?
No, his name is not Ruffle. It's not Mac Ruffalo. It's Derek Jacoby. Now, there was a letter penned by some relatively senior conservative advisors.
Okay.
Saying that the Conservative Party needs to kind of move on a little bit on their LGBT position. Mm-hmm. Now, during the election, the leader of the Federal Conservative Party, Andrew Scheer, was dogged out almost every step with, ironically saying the term dogged here, with, do you still believe that gay marriage is like the tail of a dog and uh-huh. not really a leg of a dog and so on. And although Andrew Scheer had said, you know, people's, you know, expression and understandings have evolved and, you know, my position has evolved.
Mm-hmm.
He never really super clearly defined said position. And
but it isn't. I think he's just indifferent. Which, to be fair, relative to the history of some of the more outspoken members of his party, some of which lost their seats, which the conservatives themselves pulled them out of the riding. I think if you're at least indifferent, then that's sort of the bare minimum that I would hope for somebody who's going to get elected into office, is that at the very least, you're not worried and that's somebody else's problem to deal with, which is not ideal. But it's better than being anti, you know, civil rights or equality or whatever.
So, according to the strategist Melissa Lanceman and Jamie Ellerton, who managed Scheer's road tour during the campaign, they say that for the conservative movement to grow, unequivocal support for the LGBTQ people cannot be up for debate. And they should be breaking with the past and looking at a more contemporary conservatism.
Okay.
Now, it is possible that many, not just LGBT voters, but people who maybe have LGBT children or LGBT grandchildren or friends, cousins, uncles, there are quite a lot of us, you know, people who are closely related, and they, you know, they see these really uncomfortable positions. Maybe that had an impact on how they voted. Maybe it didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that Andrew Scheer's position on this and the sort of open door to the debate in the Conservative Party had an effect on their election?
Oh, I don't know. Well, okay. I think it may have. I think there were bigger fish to fry. A lot of people were way more concerned about some of their other policies, some of their environmental policies, their relationship with the pipeline, their relationship with a lot of overseas entities and things like that. Like, I don't think this was a major issue. I wouldn't be surprised if this was a minor tipping point thing where there may have been people who were unsure, but then this tipped them over, or that this seeded the ground so that something else could tip them over. I think this kind of fit into a bigger, I don't know, landscape of things. The problem is that there's not much diversity in terms of people to vote for if you generally identify with conservatism. So if not conservatism, you could have gone with the PPC, who are brand new and probably not going to get anywhere. And I'm not going to make fun of the PPC and just say that from a strategic voting point of view, and unfortunately in a first-past-the-post system, you have to, well, you don't have to vote strategically, but a lot of people choose to. PPC is not a winning vote. Or the liberals, who are kind of conservative light, who talk like progressives. That was a cynical dig. Mm-hmm. So you don't really have many options. You're going to have a lot of people who stick with the conservatives, even though they go, oh, we could do better than this guy. But
the question is, you know, the conservatives need to expand their base.
Oh, they do, yeah.
They have, and you see this, the Conservative Party says, you know, Trudeau lost 1 million votes. You know, the conservatives have the highest vote count ever. But because of first past the post, in Alberta, when like 90-odd percent of people vote conservative, whereas in first past the post, you can have it split so 36-37% of the vote could win it. Those are a lot of votes that push you way past the point of winning. Mm-hmm. That they're not irrelevant, but they don't have the same impact. And there are these ridings that are so staunchly conservative that everybody there, every Tom, Dick and Harry is conservative, and they're not going anywhere. Those ridings are safe.
Yeah,
those voters are safe. They know what they believe and they're sticking to it. And that's absolutely fine. If the Conservatives have a chance of winning a majority or even a minority government, what they need to do is expand the number of ridings that they get the votes in. Not necessarily the number of votes, but the number of ridings.
Yeah.
They need more MPs on the Hill. And a part of that is, part of what's dogging them there is these are a lot of less rural ridings. So suburban ridings is a huge one. The GTA, the Greater Toronto Area, nearly entirely went red. And that's nearly all suburbs. And it's these people in suburbs who, you know, they see Justin Trudeau's blackface and they go, ooh, They see Andrew Scheer comparing gay marriage to a dog's tail and they go, ooh, ah. Not to say that they're equitable, but there were a couple of home goals on both sides here. And I think if the Conservatives want to try and reach these, you know, white suburban moms who are, you know, driving the kids to soccer practice in a minivan, if they want those vote, an SUV now, the minivan's a bit dated.
Yeah.
You know, if they want those voters, they need to have a coherent approach to how the Conservative Party is addressing social values. And I think that's the gist of what this letter was from those two folks.
Well, targeting the suburbs is actually pretty key, and they've learned that lesson in Ontario for sure, that there was a recent announcement from the UN, from Pew, from somebody, I don't know, somebody who does research, who said that as of the beginning of 2019, there are more people living in cities and urban areas than in the countryside. This is the first time in human history where this is true. Mm-hmm. There's a few stragglers, like France is still predominantly pastoral. Mm-hmm. Like most people in France live in the countryside. Paris is actually a very small portion of the population. But generally speaking, and this is more true in North America than most other places. We're actually going through this process faster than everywhere else. So the old reliance of conservatives who live in the countryside, it's not the same. You're looking for urban conservatives, which are
And they exist.
They do exist, for sure. And urban conservatives tend to be so-called red conservatives who are progressive, socially progressive, and they're just really interested in the government that behaves itself financially.
Well, we'll keep an eye on that and see how it moves forward. We're playing the Copa Cabana. Oh, at the Copa.
Did you say that twice on purpose?
No, it's the Copa Cabana. I did, yes, I did. You're right. It's the Copa Cabana by Barry Manilow, who famously recently revealed that he had been in a relationship with his manager, same-sex relationship, since 1978.
Whenever I hear about that sort of thing.
I hate to break the news that Barry Manilow is gay, for those who didn't know, because of the large rock they were hiding in. But no, Barry Manilow, apparently a gay man.
I always wonder when I hear a story like this, did the manager become the manager because he was his boyfriend? Or was he the manager first and they ended up dating later?
No, I think it was the manager first and then dating. But then, you know, if you saw the Rocket Man documentary by Elton John, it was the boyfriend that became the manager. And it was all a to-do, lots of drama. Great film. Check it out. Now, we're playing Copacabana. This is Barry Manilow. And we will be back just after this.
Copacabana, the hottest spot, Copacabana.
and welcome back to Can Queer, the home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian.
That is such an iconic song. Her name was Lola. She was a showgirl. Now, it's just, it sticks with you. I wanted to play some...
I think the Shatner version is kind of infamous.
Oh, yeah.
There's absolutely. That and... which is the other one.
We should have played the Shatner version. Then it would have been Canadian. I don't know if it would count as CanCon. It depends on where it was recorded. But
I suppose, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. We could have got our CanCon targets with that one. Now, unfortunately, we did play Sylvester earlier, which is Canadian. And we'll be playing out with Erasure.
Sylvester's Canadian?
That's what you told me.
No. I said somebody else was Canadian.
Oh. Erasure?
No.
Barry Manilow?
No.
Oh, none of them are Canadian.
No, it was, I can't remember her name. She was in a series of bad movies. She was a protege of Prince. She was in The Last Dragon.
That doesn't matter, we don't.
Yeah, I know. That movie was so delightfully horrible.
Was that the one where Sean Connery played the dragon?
No.
That was Braveheart.
Yeah, no.
Not Braveheart. Dragonheart?
No. The Last Dragon was like this... Blaxploitation kung fu movie set in New York.
Definitely not the one with Sean Connery. played the voice of... That's one of my favorite movies, is where Sean Connery plays the voice of a dragon.
The only good Michael Bay movie has Sean Connery in it. Sean Connery and Nick Cage. And I think the two of them just ramp it up to this point of like, what am I watching? That mm-hmm. it kind of complements the Michael Bay aspect. And I'm talking about The Rock. The movie The Rock, where they're going to blow up Alcatraz?
Not Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
No, not Dwayne The Rock Johnson, no.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about chicken. So I wanted to bring up Chick-fil-A because everyone was reporting, everyone, but a lot of people were reporting the news that Chick-fil-A, of whom have at least one store in Toronto, they are looking at opening another store in Canada.
They're backing out of the UK, though.
Well, I think they're less backing out, more getting kicked out.
Well, the style of chicken they make will never be able to compete with Nando's. And the UK does not have a long, rich history of loving roast chicken anyway.
And more importantly, the UK has a long, rich history of not suffering fools. You know, and it's like...
I mean, look at their prime minister.
Well, I mean, with an exception of elected politicians.
Yeah.
You know, but when it comes to business and things, they just won't suffer fools. And we're in an age now where it's much easier, a much better business to put a Greggs in than to deal with the kerfuffle of having a Chick-fil-A.
Right.
Like, you know, these little malls and things, there are better options with less baggage than Chick-fil-A. And because of Chick-fil-A's baggage, that is why, I'm trying to find the article on it, that is why it's coming up again, because they are claiming that they claimed briefly that they will be backing down from their charity making donations to anti-LGBT organizations. Now, quick recap for our listeners, and this was the, you know, does buying a chicken sandwich in Toronto mean that the gays in Uganda are getting stoned to death? Well, there's a couple of steps.
There's a lot of intermediate steps. And not only that, but they donate to a lot of organizations.
Well, they donated like three or four.
But though a couple of those, I looked into them, are, I don't want to say shell company because that's something else. They're like parent companies that also donate to a wide array of smaller. Because like if you want to donate to any kind of homelessness campaign or anti-homelessness campaign, I really should say, a lot of that stuff is done locally, and being able to take, you know, a couple million dollars worth of a donation and spread it out across a large area, you're going to get other organizations that specialize in finding ways to get money to those people. And a couple of the organizations that Chick-fil-A donates to, it's really that sort of an umbrella company that sends money out to places all over the United States and the world. Some of them are just direct things, like they donate to the Salvation Army, and that's going to come up. They donate to a lot of things. They donate to a lot of causes. It's just, even if it's a small portion, the issue is that it is a part of it. Even if most of the money goes towards soup kitchens and shelters for the homeless and things to help families that are dealing with medical bankruptcy, which is a thing in the States. Even if they mostly do that, but they also donate to, indirectly donate to organizations that engage in, what's that gay therapy thing when they shock you?
Conversion therapy.
There you go. My brain and words today. Conversion therapy. The fact that they're doing that at all and are indifferent to it, that's bad. And that's a lot of the protest is, you know, maybe you should care about mm-hmm. that. And some of it, because when you read, I've read interviews with various representatives of Chick-fil-A, the CEO, the guy who founded it, some of their marketing people. And a lot of them are saying, you know, some of these people are never going to be happy until we're open on Sundays and selling men's buttless thong underwear with every piece of chicken, which is a bit of an exaggeration. But I mean, to a certain degree, there's a portion of that where I'm like, yeah, I get it. Cause there are crowds you're never going to please, and you got to stick to your base and you say, we care about the following things. We care about Christian values. We care about family. We care about rural America. That's great. Don't cause harm. That's really all it comes down to, that you can believe those things. You can be shut on Sunday. You can do everything you want, but please just stop donating to organizations that condone the torture of, you know, queer youth. And I think that message alone, I think, is a pretty clean one. That I actually think there's something noble about the fact that they're sticking to their guns, except for this one thing. They're sticking to one gun where it's like, you're choosing the wrong battle on that front, for sure.
The Chick-fil-A announced that they're going to be pulling funding from organizations that have a historical record of being very anti-LGBT. And when we were talking about...
I don't know about historical records. How far back are we going? Quite
an accurate historical... I mean, even recently, 2016, 2014, okay. We're not talking like the 1800s here.
Okay.
You know, and this is where...
Because the Canadian government, until 97... had a bad relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean...
So, the point here is that when people in Toronto, for example, the Chick-fil-A opened, mm-hmm. the question was, does buying a sandwich kill gays in Uganda? And what happens is the profits, the corporate profits, a portion of that gets siphoned off and given to the Chick-fil-A Foundation.
Yeah.
That foundation then hands money over to a particular charity, this particular Christian charity, the name of it escapes me.
After paying their CEOs probably a couple million apiece.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That charity then has missionary work, one of which went to this particular... We talked about it in depth a couple of weeks ago. I don't have that same information in front of me. But the issue was, you could draw a wiggly wobbly line back to Chick-fil-A. And at the end of the day, Nando's doesn't have a wibbly wobbly line to anywhere.
Well, exactly, yeah.
Your McChicken has less of a wibbly wobbly. You know, they make children's youth camps, you know, for the McHappy House or whatever
it's called. I'm gluten intolerant, unfortunately, so it's completely off the table because everything's wrapped in poison if you go to Chick-fil-A. So that's, I would never...
All of the wheats.
I would never go anyway, but let's pretend like I'm not gluten intolerant. My opinion is currently the same way that I feel about Starbucks, because I drink my coffee black, and Starbucks is not good coffee to drink black.
You so. Like your coffee like you like your man.
With glasses?
In a cup.
With freckles, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. But anyway, so if there was a Starbucks next to literally anything else, I will go to literally anything else. But if...
It's a corporate giant.
If there is an hour's walk between here and the closest anywhere else
that serves coffee... You need a coffee to get that.
Yeah. If I need a coffee to get there, I will suffer it, and I will get the Starbucks. I mean, even in Islam, you're allowed to eat pork if there's literally nothing else to eat. If it's pork or death, you're allowed to eat pork.
Now, the issue here is not necessarily that they would... I mean, we took umbrage with the fact that they were making these donations.
Yeah.
And pointing out that there are so many other options.
Yeah.
Spend your money somewhere else.
Yeah.
A local family-run chicken joint, for example. Now,
or literally anything.
Chick-fil-A. You were saying about sticking to their guns. This is the absolute opposite of what they did.
Yeah.
They announced, you know what? because of all of this bad karma. We talked about the fact that they were being pushed out of the UK.
Yeah.
Their expansion into the British market is ground to a halt.
Yeah.
Because people think they're homophobic.
Yeah.
Their expansion into the Canadian market is ground to a halt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Chick-fil-A is the second or third largest fast food company in the United States.
Oh.
But only in the United States. It has almost zero footprint outside of the U.S.
Like White Castle and Jack in the Box and all these American chains that show up in movies all the time, mm-hmm. but never outside of America.
Yeah, and they're trying to push internationally, but their reputation in countries that aren't full of Americans are like, whoa, we don't want a restaurant that is, you know, funneling money into conversion therapy, for example.
Yeah.
You know, we don't want that. We don't want that. Take it somewhere else. We'll stick with Nando's. And it's having a real impact. So Chick-fil-A, thinking ahead, was like, you know what? We'll put out a press release. We're not going to donate money to there anymore. We're going to donate money to food banks. No one disagrees with food banks.
Yeah.
Everybody loves a food bank.
Food banks are great.
Food banks, very popular.
Yeah.
Homelessness. No one's disagreeing with homeless people.
No.
Let's do that. Let's stick with those. We'll be good to go.
You might disagree with individual homeless people, but nobody disagrees with helping.
There's a couple
people.
Of disagreeable ones that I've come across.
In this neighborhood,
absolutely. But there is nothing that... Yeah, and they're like, yes, let's do it. This is our new official stance. Food banks, homelessness. We're not doing any of that super right-wing Christian donations anymore. We're all good. We're all good. Let's move on. Everybody move on. We want to build more shops. And that lasted for maybe less than 12 hours.
Okay, yeah.
Because all of the Christian rights groups in the States are like, whoa, this is an attack. We feel persecuted. That you're no longer donating the hundreds of millions that you were before. The Salvation Army released a statement saying that they were disappointed with Chick-fil-A's decision on this, on what they accused of being a malicious rumor mill about their reputation with LGBT folks. Mm-hmm. We'll get into that in just a few moments. And I think within 12 hours, the CEO of Chick-fil-A began backpedaling at quite a heavy, swift speed.
Uh-huh.
He could have won an Olympic medal for the backpedal and announced that, no, right now, this very moment, we're doing food banks and homelessness. But, you know, in the near future, who knows who will be donating?
Yeah.
Maybe the very three charities that we've said we're not donating to. And that was it. They were like... Big announcement, Chick-fil-A learned its lesson, change of heart, no longer anti-gay, we won't be funneling money into charities that specifically exclude gay people for all of 12 hours.
Well, this is why it's so important to follow up on this sort of thing, because this is a strategy that a lot of people are starting to notice in the media, that you're getting this, like the fake news cycle.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody is guilty of this to the same degree, but every single... publisher has used this strategy at some point or another in the past 5 years, where you release an article, super bombastic, definitely going to get the clicks, everybody's eyes on it. Here's the thing, it doesn't even need to be true. That even major publishers like Wall Street Journal, New York Times, here in Canada, you're getting the various global networks, publishing things they know to be a lie, with the strategy that on the following day, they will publish a full apology and retraction. Thing is, people don't read apologies and retractions. They read the big stories. So they read the big story on the front where it's, you know, some kid did this thing and now everybody hates him and now there's stuff. Oh, we're all horrible, sky's falling. And then the next day they say, yeah, you know, at the time of reporting, we didn't have sufficient information and we apologize to our readers for being 100% wrong in every way possible. We take full responsibility. Our editor was a schmuck and the author was a schmuck. Apologies. So now what they can do is they can basically write whatever they want and they can kind of get away with it because they're getting ahead of the libel circuit. So you're not going to get class action lawsuits or there'll be attempts at it, but they'll tend to fail and you can't do a whole bunch of things because they are doing this thing where they apologize immediately and they retract immediately. And if you try to complain, they say, well, we did apologize. And this is happening a lot more because this is something that you like to talk about. You like to educate our listeners on being media savvy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why I'm doing it this once, but...
I don't know. You're stealing my job
here. I am stealing your job. But no, this is something like... this is why it's so important to follow up on stories like this, because it is... It could be that they caved. It could be that this was the strategy the whole time. Go in front of the camera, apologize to the world, say you're never going to do it again, and then the next day go right back to it. Because who checks the follow-up?
So
we do, sometimes.
Ellie Goulding was in the news because she was going to play a perform at a football game that was sponsored by Salvation Army.
Yeah, that was a week and a half ago.
Last week, at some point. And then she said, oh, no, Salvation Army's anti-gay, because her fans were like, whoa, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And then she had a meeting with the Salvation Army, changed her mind, and performed anyway.
Yeah.
Now, the Salvation Army is very keen on getting across to people, including ourselves,
yes,
that they are not homophobic.
Right.
That... if you want their help and support, their doors are open to anybody.
Right.
They even go so far as to note that 40% of all homeless people that they work with are LGBT identified. Which isn't a statistic that they have internally. It is a well-established fact that as a whole, especially youth,
are 25 LGBT. And under is 40%, for sure. But yeah. For adults, it's mostly people with... undiagnosed or untreated mental health issues.
So they specifically said youth, that 40% of them, but that's kind of misleading because it's not that they're out there specifically opening their doors to 40% of homeless youth.
Yeah.
It is because of all homeless people, 40% are LGBT homeless youth.
Yeah.
So there's that. I mean, it's not like the Salvation Army, they're saying that there's been isolated incidents of... homophobia.
And that's the thing. They don't have any institutional policy. Because I looked it up today because I was like, oh, I should probably refresh it.
Well, it's a church. It's a whole church.
Yeah.
In 2014, they opposed gay marriage in the States. In 2016, they pulled support from a safe school program because it focused on LGBT students. In 2012, they said celibacy is the only way to go in the States, I think, as well. And they have a long history. In New Zealand, they collected signatures to oppose the decriminalization of homosexuality. So globally, you can point to nearly any countries, and there's at least one record of a dodgy decision.
In the past couple of years as well.
Well, not like I said, 2014, 15, 16. Yeah. Their own website for a while had links to conversion therapy in 2013. 14, until people were like, what are you doing? And this is kind of ridiculous. Do I believe that all Salvation Armies are built the same? Absolutely not.
Yeah.
And I think that, people need to be a bit prudent and look at your local chapters.
They also don't have any specific policies against that sort of thing, because you do have local Salvation Armies that are perfectly fine. You have other ones where you hear reports about queer youth being turned away at the door, or trans-identified people not being...
Yeah, trans woman being refused service recently. I think that was last year or the year before.
And you could say, well, that was just whoever was on staff at that time was... were the trans...
It undermines the argument that our doors are open to anyone.
Well, here's the thing. Because you can have individuals do stuff. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, that happens. It's the part of doing a business. Your employees or volunteers, in some cases... don't have your corporate image in mind. They have their own personal agendas. That's fine. It's the follow-up. Was there follow-up? Did the entity of Salvation Army do any kind of policy changes or pull that person aside and say, look, you can't do this? The answer is no. So they don't have institutional policies that are explicitly homophobic or transphobic, but they also have no policies that protect people who are LGBT when they try to use the service. So they're kind of indifferent, and it's kind of like I guess the equivalent, you could say it's like a non-whipped vote that, you can go with your conscience, dear employees. Whatever it is that you think is best, there you go.
Well, if you don't take our word for it, there was a provost of a Anglican church in Glasgow who got quite annoyed at this PR campaign by the Salvation Army to be less homophobic. And he particularly noted, this was covered by Pink News, he was the provost of St. Mary's Cathedral in Glasgow, quite a senior Anglican priest there in Scotland, saying, you can't be a member of the Salvation Army and wear their uniform or be an officer of the Salvation Army if you are gay and married or in a partnership. He also said Christians shouldn't tell lies in public or bear false witnesses.
Oh, he's getting biblical.
Yeah, he is. He was not happy. We need to better understand the relationship with the LGBT community. I mean, I think at the end of the day, there are many churches in your community. Talk to your local priest, see what's happening there. Talk to your food banks. You know, there are, it is unfortunate that in many cities, all of the homelessness shelters are run by the church. There's only one that isn't in Ottawa.
And it's federally funded, and it's not explicitly exclusively for Inuit and Métis.
No, it's not the one I'm thinking of.
Oh, you're not thinking of Wabanaw?
No.
Okay.
But no, there are very few out there. I mean, we're not saying don't make donations, but we're just thinking, you know, dig a little deeper. Talk about your local chapter. See where the money's really going.
Yeah.
And put your dollar where you value it.
We do have a secular, municipally run food drive here, though. So we do have that.
And most municipalities do. And if you are a, what do you call those bell ringers for the Salvation Army, that's absolutely fine.
Yeah.
You know, I think it takes...
Because money does go to people who need it.
Absolutely. And they do a lot of good work. And I think that every year when gay people bring up the, oh, Salvation Army jingle, I think it's important. It puts pressure on the Salvation Army to be accessible to everybody and not cherry pick who gets service and gets help. And I think that that is important pressure. It's important work. Mm-hmm. And folks in the Salvation Army can be a part of that work as well, making sure that everyone has access to the help when they desperately need it. But we have desperately run out of time.
We have desperately run out of time.
Absolutely. I'm going to have to do a whole bunch of editing to get it clipped to the right length. We have run out of time. We're playing with A Little Respect by Erasure.
Right.
I'm a big fan of the song. Okay. I've been Luke Smith.
I've been Sebastian. And thanks for listening. I try to discover a little something to make.